Well, I'm really pleased to say I'm joined by Gary Wiltshire. And Gary, we have so much to talk about. I'm really looking forward to this interview, so thank you so much. It's been a long time since we've seen you on our screens. I've managed to catch you on your way to Windsor Races tonight. We're here in Windsor at the Complete Angler. Where have you been?
Well, everyone thought I was dead, Julie. I think I'd had wreaths, I've had flowers sent to me, but I've still been about, but all the Sky finished. Naturally, we're in the Complete Angler, and this is where we were 10 years ago for Sky when we had the Derby draw one day. No, I've been about, still got all my racecourse pitches, and got 70-odd racecourse pitches. Still do 2 days a month on Betfred TV on a Sunday, because the travelling's not so bad as midweek. But yeah, we're still here, Julie, we're still breathing. I don't know how, but we are still breathing.
It's been an amazing journey for you in the world of gambling. And I think it's fair to say gambling was pretty much in your blood. It was a big part of your childhood.
Yeah, when I was a kid, my mum and dad, you know, we lived in London and we lived opposite a pub, and there was a bookies next door, Harry Bar, when he was called. And that was our life, Julie, really. Even then, like, you know, when I was a kid, I used to get 4 cards out of a playing pack and get the 4 kings out, turn them over. If it was an ace, we moved the ace of diamonds one up. If it was an art, and had like make out races in when I was 6 years of age. So really and truly, it's been in my blood all the time. Whether it's done me any favour being in that, I really don't know, because people said to me the other day, and people always ask the question, and when was you happiest, you know, before everyone mentions Frankie as well. And really and truthfully, I would say that I was more happy when I used to sell flowers in the market and I used to earn me £200 a week. I was happy. But with that, and then all of a sudden I become a big bookmaker, and you know, your life changes, Julie, really does change.
It really does. It wasn't just all about gambling though. Your family were big sports fanatics as well, so you went to dogs and horse racing whilst you were still in a pram.
Yeah, my dad used to play football for Brentford, he was a goalkeeper, and when I was a kid, you wouldn't believe it, looking at the size of me, when I first got married, I think I was 12 stone 7, and I had trials for the Orient in goal as well, goalkeeper, followed the family tradition. But that all finished when we moved out of London, and instead of playing football, I think I was playing fish and chip shops all the time and eating, and it got completely out of hand, you know.
And you were a good footballer, weren't you?
I was all right, Julie, yeah, I was all right. Yeah, when I was 12 stone, I was all right, but not now. But it's just, you know, my son as well, my youngest son, Charlie, he's had trials for, could have went to Newcastle, Everton as a goalkeeper, but he's like me, you know, give it up.
Alongside all that, you were kind of brought up at various markets, mostly selling flowers, and you had a few famous customers as well,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, my mum and dad, they had a store in Lever Lane Market in Oban, and right near where the Daily Mirror was, and they had 2 stalls, so as you grow up, my dad had one and he'd give me the other one, and I used to go get up early in the morning, go to Covent Garden, buy me flowers, and come back home to Tottenham. In them days, I was paying £6 a week rent for Tottenham. You know, for the flat, we was downstairs in an house, and it was just them days, you know, if you had any sort of money, you should have looked after it. Instead, every time I got a few quid, I was going to Haringey Dogs on a Friday night and having a bet. I thought, well, I've got me a bit of money, but they were different days, Julie, you know, they were family days, and it does turn the clock back.
Gambling quite quickly became a problem for you. You've said that you don't actually remember your 21st birthday.
No, before I was a bookmaker, I was, every penny I got, I was doing. You know, I was going in betting shops all over, you know, just betting and betting and betting. And becoming a bookmaker really saved me, I think. It saved me for what I am, because I would definitely have got into trouble. You know, there was no respect for money. You know, I would do anything just to, if you could get a 5 or a 10, but every 5 or 10 I got, unfortunately, I was playing it up and going and having a 5 a bet or a 10 a bet. But you get in life, you get the winning and losing. And when I went to the magistrate, so fun, I've got to tell you this story, it's so fun. I went to Stony Stratford Magistrates Court, and that's just outside Milton Keynes. And I did have a little bit of trouble when I was a kid, but not too much. And all of a sudden, the solicitor then stood up, Gary Wiltshire, when I stood up, and all of a sudden, police objection. I thought, oh, here we go. What's happened here? And the policeman said, you were drunk and disorderly in Bridlington one day, and he was found for, well, I've never been to Bridlington in my life. I don't even know where Bridlington was, and I was just about to say something, and I had a solicitor with me, and he knocked me on the leg as if to say, be quiet, be quiet. And the judge said, oh, we'll give you a chance. He said, you know, everyone's have a drink one day in their life. And I got my licence granted, and that was about 41 years ago, 42 years ago now.
Yeah, you were 23 when you took out your
yeah,
racing licence.
Yeah, 64 now, yeah,
and
getting
it all
older.
Started at the greyhound racing.
Yeah, loved it.
Dogs has been your sort of, your first love, I think.
Dogs has been my, I started my first proper job, I was a kennel hand at the GRA, Norfolk, who owned White City, all the big tracks, you know, the GRA, Ground Racing Association, and I was a kennel hand for Jim Singleton, whose brother, Randy, trained Kamira Flash for Prince Philip when I think that won the Derby. So I was always in it all my life, the dog game. I love dog racing all my life, you know, and it breaks your heart now to see how our game that we really love is going. Got to get someone in it. You mustn't let Graham Racing go. If Graham Racing goes, I think all the industry goes.
What would you do with it?
What would I do with it? Well, I'm no one would. What would I do with it? Right. Good question. I go racing all the time, horse racing. In the summer, we have concerts on. You go to Newmarket, you can get 25, 30,000 people there on a Friday night. The people are not going to watch horse racing. They're going for concerts as well. Why can't the big day, the Derby days, why can't we have a big act? Madness have been performing at all the racetracks this summer. Every time they go, there's 12, 15,000 sell out every day. They're charging £40, Julie, to go there. Why can't the Graham Racing charge £30, £25? The beat track, Central Park. Or if you have an act on after racing, then people are going to go, they're going to go Graham Racing first. When they go Graham Racing, they thought, oh, we like this, and they'll come back, and that's what you want. You don't want people, you want people all the time, Graham Racing, Graham, listen, look, you try your life with Graham Racing, you all do on Racing Post TV to try to pull people in. This year's Derby, Nottingham, and I thought Nottingham done a real good job. I weren't there final night, funny enough, I was coming back on holiday, but it would have. I went there to the Eclipse when Mark Lauber sponsored it this year, went there one night. One thing I think Graham Racing should do, between racing, when Toaster was still with us, please God, we'll always get Toaster back, you should have people like yourself, Darryl Willing, obviously, talking to people, talking to the trainers, talking to punters, talking to the owners, between racing, because when you go racing now, you get an MC. When I go to Chelmsford, you've got Tomo. He is fantastic. He comes out to people, hello, big fella. But he's very, very good, and he puts, but it's a night out. When you go Graham, you don't want to go there for 12 races just to see the air go around 12 times. Result, first four, second two. Let's have a bit of life between races. Interview people, so people who are there have got something to listen to. You know, when you do the interviews on the TV, Grand Derby, semi-final, final, why can't that happen live on the course as well so everyone can hear it? Not only the people
Toaster
at home.
Toaster did have that. They did have that.
Toaster had it. And why can't we do it
now? It made a great atmosphere as well.
It was an atmosphere, Julie. It's all about atmosphere. And that is something I think Graham Racing has got to do. Forget about it. Look, I know it's all bookmaker related, but they want winners and losers and SPs. Okay. But if people go with the dogs, give them a night out, Julie. Don't just sit in a restaurant, eat your starter, eat your main course, and eat your dessert. Between racing, let someone come on and talk to people and go through the card with them. Oh, the next race, we've got track two here, Julie Collier. If this leads, this will win. That's what people want to hear. Don't let us read the race card. People like yourself, go there, the tracks. Give them, get someone there. We want a bit of atmosphere like they do at the horse racing. And it does work, Julie.
You've owned plenty of dogs as well. We'll come on to horse racing in a bit, but I just want to finish by talking about your greyhound ownership, because you've had plenty of dogs, actually.
Plenty of dogs, yeah.
What's been your best moment as a greyhound owner?
Best moment as a greyhound owner? I took a dog once to Inkley, the flapping track. We had a dog called Exclusive Native, used to run at Oxford. And we took him to Inkley flapping track, and we give him two trials, and he ran really slow. I don't know why he ran slow, but he did do. He done what he was told the first two times. And then all of a sudden, one night, I think I had about 280 quid in our pocket, and it was 5-1, and we had the 280 quid on it, like trapped. So we called him Black Trevor at Inkley, because he was a black dog. Naturally, you couldn't call them the same names as what they run on the thing. And he won that night. We had two, I think we won 1,400 quid. That was the best night with dog. Look, I love any dog type. You know, I had a dog for my son, Danny, and Trevor Cobbold trained it. The late Trevor Cobbold, king of the carrots, you know. And it turned out he was really, really ill this night. You know, he was dying with cancer. And he phoned us up and he said, Gal, bring Danny with you tonight. The dog will win. And it was in an A7 or A8, the first race at Mildon Hall. It was even money. Never made no difference with the price. And the dog won. And Danny went to get his trophy and everything. And about 3 days later, we lost Trevor Cobbold, who was a fan, big name, still a big name now, Kevin Cobbold, Yarmouth. Mm. And that was a day that sticks in your mind when like Trevor, he weren't skint, Trevor Cobbold, he was a very wealthy fella, but he'd come there that night and stood on the winner's roster with young Danny, and that was the night she don't forget, Julie.
Are you still involved in dog racing now at all?
No, Julie, no. When Toaster went, I was the Lord Eskiff invited us to be the bookie in the restaurant for the last derby we had at Toaster. And we went for the eats and we went for the semi-final. We used to go every Saturday night as well. We were like the bookie with the old-fashioned bookie stand with the electric board. And the punters loved it, you know. Even had our old governor there the last time, Dave Lawrence, he backed it with us. He dog won that night on the on the Toaster
Cup. He's the old Sky Sports producer, of course.
Dave, yeah, and I think that was about a 12-1 chance he backed. So, but everyone in there come up and look, Julie, what I said, we want atmosphere. And like, we give it a bit of atmosphere when we was in the restaurant. I said we had all the balls flashing with the odds on. And people know, and what I've always been, you can have a pound up to a grand on one. And, you know, you can have what you like on. But treat everyone the same, whether you're skint or whether you're a millionaire. And I was, Toaster was really, really, you know, I thought it was such a shame. Yourself, you say it yourself, well, don't we? You know, will we get Toaster back? We've got to, Julie. Or another big track. Let's open another one.
Let's hope so. So, Gary, your career had been going really well as a bookmaker, actually. You were very successful. In fact, I think straight before Frankie happened, you'd just been to Yarmouth, made 60 grand. You went for a nice meal and you just bought a holiday house for cash. You had a place in Portugal, a couple of Mercedes. Life was good.
Very good, Julie. Yeah, that was a funny day in Yarmouth. The big bookmaker was next to us, called Roy Christie. And he had a car broke down on the way there, and there was only one big punter there who used to come. He used to have 10 grand a race on. And Roy never made it that day. I was there. I think I went with me. I think I had about 2.5 grand in my pocket. Also, first bet, 10,000 at 4-1 he had to fill. I thought, well, hang on a chance. We've got a chance here. I've always been a chance all my life, Julie. Anyway, all of a sudden, 6 races later, we never backed a winner. So I won 60 grand. So we were staying at the Cliff Hotel in Galston. Really nice, that is, if anyone's in there. I think it's best hotel in Yarmouth. And the following day I got a taxi. He said to the taxi driver, where would you like to go if you had somewhere to live? Where was the best place? And he took us to a little village called Winterton-on-Sea, past Emsby. And there was a thatched cottage there. Oh, really lovely. It was called Arbour Cottage. And I rang up the estate agent, Aldridge, it was, of Great Yarmouth. I said, how much is that cottage? He said, 59,500. I've just won that. So I said to the woman, yeah, we'll have it. And she said, but you mean you want to go and view it? I said, no, I'll have it. I've had it was on a green opposite a pub. Mm-hmm. And now, even when I go to Yarmouth now, I still go there now. It brings back memories. That was the thing that I lost at, because after the Tory Day, everything had to go. And that cottage is still there. And I think he might have bought it, Dion Dublin, of Homes Under the Hammer, because I know he was interested, or he was interested after. But that was lovely there. But Julie, you win and lose at this game.
It was a real sliding doors moment, the Magnificent 7 day, as it went on to be called, because you were actually meant to be going to Worcester races.
Exactly right, yeah, I was on my way to Worcester when I got to the M40, because I lived at Milton Keynes, great Little Allwood, which is just out of Milton Keynes, and that day we was at the roundabout, and there was a big traffic jam at Banbury on the M40, and I rang my clerk up, Pete Houghton, who's a bookie now. And I said, Pete, turn back, we'll go to Ascot. It looks a real hard card. We'll only mess about, play small, and we might go and try to nick a monkey, which is £500. Little did I realise, 3.5 hours later, I don't know about the £500, but, you know, it was a killer, you know, to lose 1.4 million on one race. And I was in front going into the last two races.
Well, when you tell the story of what happened on that day, it's almost like you really didn't realise what was happening as it transpired.
Well, I think what it was, Julie, inside a fat person is a thin person. And on that day, I was like the man on the end of the pier. I was like the comedian. I was standing on the box. And by the seventh race, people were just coming into you with all bets, 2 grand, 4 grand, 5 grand. And I thought, this is me. I'll have all this, you know what I mean? And I stood there. You don't forget, the odds were 16-1 in the morning or 20-1. And I was laying 2-1. I laid Corals. Corals took the best price, 4-1. And then it went to 3-1, 5-2, 2-1. No one else could back it. There was no other bookie big enough who wanted to have a go. Bearing in mind, I thought myself, hang on, there's a chance here. I'm laying 2-1, a 16-1 chance. But we all know the story, Fujiyama Quest, and it won.
So as Fujiyama turned for home, they ring a bell at Ascot, don't they? What was going through your mind at that precise moment?
I'll be true, right? When it went off in front, I thought, this can't. I always used to love horses wearing blinkers, because when I owned horses myself, and when they put blinkers on, that was the last straw. We revert to a pair of blinkers. You never see many Derby winners wear blinkers, or, you know what I mean, you know, these top horses. And I just thought it was going to get beat all the time, and I was standing there watching it. And when he rang that bell, I thought, hang on, it could be on us here. And when it went past the post, well, then it never hurt that day. The time it hurt on the Sunday, I went Ascot on the Sunday again the day after. And when I got there, Sue Barker interviewed me from BBC. And that day, I never took a bet in three races, because it was a rumour going around, don't bet with Wiltshire, he won't pay. He's done his money yesterday. You have a bet with him, you'll never get paid. I lasted three races, walked in the car, sat in the car, cried my eyes out and thought, this is unbelievable. I've always tried to be a payer in my life, you know what I mean? And when it happened, and I thought, if no one wants to bet with you, that was the thing that hurt more than the most. And then from Monday onwards, then I thought, right, we've got to go and start paying people back. I went into Coral's head office on the Monday, and I think it's in the first book it's got all the statement in the book. And I think I owed Coral $250,000. And Trevor Bowman, who was their top man, was there. And he said, oh, Gary, it's lovely to see you. I said, hang on a minute, I've got to tell you what's going to happen. And I said, look, I'm going to sell. I've got an house, two houses I had, in fact. And I said, I'm going to, as soon as I sell it, you'll get paid every penny, sell the cars, everything. And he said, well, the other firms are trying to put a bit of pressure on me to take you to court so you lose your licence. That's what the other bookies trying to do, the big bookies. So anyway, he said, I'm not going to do that, I trust you. It took me nearly 4 years to pay everyone back, but I paid everyone back from that day, so I could hold my head up high. And would it happen again? It nearly happened again this year at Ascot.
Well, exactly, at Royal Ascot. We'll come to that in a moment. But you, of course, did have the option to declare yourself unable to pay, and you would have lost your licence.
Only for 3 years, and then I would have come back. I could come back again. I don't think I'd have even lost my licence. I think in them days, if you don't, it was a new rule. There was a rule that if you'd never put, I don't know, you might have been right there, Julie, but I know in 3 years' time, I'd have been warned off the race courses, I think, for 3 years. So I couldn't have went horse racing for 3 years.
Is there a bit of you that wishes you'd done that?
Nah, never. No, I've been brought up a company. We've started with nothing, we've finished with nothing, the way it's going on. No. I think if you're a bookie, unlike a lot of bookies now, when they come and press the buttons and they green up and they get their bit of money that they've got, they never lose. But with me, I've always been a bookie. Even now, I want winners and I want losers. I don't want to, that's what I want in life.
Has Frankie Dettori ever spoken to you about it?
Yeah, Frankie, I was doing the BBC in, where was we? We was in Dubai. And he come and jumped on my back, we was at the hotel, and he come and jumped on my back, and he was as good as gold, Frankie. He still is now. When I see him at the point of, Gardy, 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 and he jumps on the thing, and we have a laugh and different things, you know. And really and truly, Frankie, that day, I know it's going to sound silly, but that made my life. Because although I went done my money that day, since then I got on the BBC, working on the BBC as a betting presenter with John Power. Fantastic. You imagine, everyone sees you on BBC. When they come to the races, who do they bet with? Oh, it's the belly from the telly there, Gary Wiltshire. Mm-hmm. And they bet with you. Then I got on Sky Greyhounds, Dave Lawrence gave me a chance to get on that. Fantastic. We had a great time, Julie. You was working on Sky as well at the time. Everyone was so friendly. It was fantastic. They were good days. So although I'd done my money, did I do my money? Because since then, I live well. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
It certainly changed your life. But there is a serious side to this, in the sense that when it did dawn on you what had happened, and you had all these debts, and you had a baby on the way at the time, and you had to sell everything, there was a point where you weren't sure if you wanted to live or die.
Exactly. In people, when they see, when I call myself, big, and inside you think, you don't show it when you have good days or bad days. I hate that. When you see bookies at the races where they win a lot of money on one race, they jump up and down. I just don't like that. I think punters and bookmakers, you've got to be. And I was very, very low, very, very depressed, And for a moment, I went up to Scotland on the Monday. I see Trevor Bowman, and on the Tuesday, I went up to Scotland for 3 days. And walking around, in them days, I could walk a lot better. And I'm walking around Loch Lomond and thinking, what am I going to do? This is going to be too much for me to get out of trouble. I just don't think I can do it. And then all of a sudden, after 3 days, I come back, right, the house was going to go. Bearing in them days, I sold my house in Little Orwood for $600,000. Warren House, it was a training establishment anyway. So you can imagine, $600,000 20-odd years ago, how much would that be worth now? Millions, and also they've got planning permission now, but there's about 100 houses on the site. So that's how my luck's been all my life, really, down
and
up. You
sound very laid back about it, but it must have been a really difficult time, to put it lightly.
Yeah, it was difficult, Julie, I suppose, when you say laid back on it. But what am I going to do? Could I sit down and cry? you know, later on I was absolutely, that the Tory day was a killer, but later on in my life and what happened with a newspaper journalist, what they put on the headlines and said what I was and what I never, which I never, that hurt more than doing my money the Tory day. Money's not everything, Julie, you know. You know, you got money one day, you ain't the next. As long as you got you can breathe, and you know, as long as you got your health, I think that means more than anything.
Recently, when Frankie Dettori rode the first four at Royal Ascot, you were actually working elsewhere, so you weren't really too aware of what was going
on. And I got a text from yourself saying, "Are you at Ascot today?" We was about
just checking that history wasn't going to repeat itself.
Yeah, it was funny that day because I had my son, I had young Charlie there, who was representing me at Ascot, and I never, because I was at Chelmsford, I was playing. It was Ladies' Day at Chelmsford, you know. And after I found out, and I texted him, and I said, "Well, how you done today?" And he said, "Frankie had the first four." I said, "Yeah, well, I knew anyway." And he said, "Oh, the fifth one." I said, "I hope you stood the fifth one for a lot of money." And he said, "No." He said, I thought that would win." He said, "I never laid it." He said, I never laid the fourth one." He said, "We've won 900 on the day." And I thought to myself, well, at least he's not going to take after me, because if I was there, I would have given that fifth one a striping as well.
And would you have done it again?
Of course I would. It only would got you? Beat a short head, yeah. It only got beat a short head. I'd have had another go, I think, yeah. People say that, but I'd have had another go, yeah.
I mean, will it happen again ever, whether it's Frankie or somebody else?
Anything can happen, Julie. You know, I think after what you got so close there with Frankie and the fifth one, you know, how much, God knows how much Ben stood it for as well, Ben Key. Because if you're a bookie, you've got to stay in these horses. In my eyes, if something's 12 to 1, if you can lay 4 to 1, you got to lay it. I would never have laid it for as much as I did before, but I would have took me 2 or 3 grand out of it.
I think the bookies have sort of learnt from your mistakes, even if you haven't. They are actually scared of laying,
they
know, multiple
are,
bets,
yeah,
on Frankie particularly.
There was a few firms that day, they never laid Jenk, they never laid, they laid the bets, but you couldn't. But look, I know what it's like to bookmaker. When people say about Onk, that everyone's moaning about the off-course firms not taking the bets and everything. You imagine, Jury, how much they'd have had to pay out. You know, I think a lot of firms would have went skint that day. You know, you missed come to millions and millions and millions it would have come to. You know, so the people that moan about bookmakers have never been a bookmaker themselves. There's plenty of bookmakers on the Betfair forum who think they are bookmakers, but if they were bookmakers that day when that horse was 14 to 1, leg 5 last Thursday, why did it go off 4 to 1? Or 7 to 2 or 3 to 1 favourite? Why didn't they lay it if they thought they want to be bookies? But the game, you know, I can't run bookies down, because what they do, they're running a business, Julie. It's like myself, you know. And when I see that day, but I never forget, I had an interview for ITV the following day, and he said to me, Brian Gleeson, he said, how did you feel? And I said, in my heart, I wanted them all to win, because let them go through the pain barrier that I've been through for 20 odd years. But listen, Frankie, we love him. We need people like that in the sport. If we ain't got Frankie Dettori, we ain't got no sport to.
So Frankie Dettori happened. 4 years, you paid everyone back, and then of course you have to carry on with your career, and you got involved in lots of other sports, which has actually been very fun, albeit a learning curve for you along the way.
Yeah, I've always been one to come up with the odds for different things, and like spinning the coin, like, you know, if you can lay 10 to 11 both of them, you've got a chance. But yeah, I've got involved in all sport. Fishermania, that was good. Barry Earns Fishermania, I got involved in that. We've done that. I was here last Saturday, if I remember, the 12th year I've done it for Fishermania. Do the odds. I've done the snooker betting. What else have I done for snooker?
Burley Horse Show?
Burley, yeah, I was for first.
You didn't
bookie.
Have a clue what
never
you were
had a
betting
clue
on.
For Burley, no, I was representing a tote there one day, and on the final day there was an horse, it was 22 years of age on the show jumping, and it couldn't win, it had a funny name on it, and I put up 66 to 1. Anyway, everyone had their fivers and tenners on it. I think I stood it for about 35,000 if it would have won. But anyway, I had to ring the office up. We don't want this. Well, why have you done this? What? It never won, but you can imagine. Yeah, I've done everything.
So how did you find out what to lay?
Well, you always read the card and try to find out which ones are the favourites and which ones what. I had someone mark my card. I think it was a Free Barrel name who helped me as well.
It sounds like, quite risky bookmaking.
Of course it's risky. John McCruick, the great John McCruick, he said to me once when I was on Channel 4 the morning night, he said, "Are you a bookmaker? Are you a gambler?" I said, "John, all bookies are gamblers." And that is that we are. We've got it in our blood. All bookmakers are gamblers. Well, we used to be till now when you go to the racetrack. You see the people, they never lose. So I think there's a lot of people who are not gamblers. Yeah, you know, in them days, we're all gamblers.
How many pitches did you have when Tote bought them all?
I think I had about 70, and I think only about 5 of them was any good. But they bought them all, the 70, and I was with a tote for the last 5 years. In fact, I would have still been with them now. Well, it's Betfred now. But fortunately, the BBC offered me a job as their betting presenter with John Power, and I couldn't keep both jobs on. So I couldn't be work for the tote and be a bookmaker and then work for the BBC. So I chose the BBC life, and I did enjoy it, funny enough. And when I left the BBC, bearing in mind I was 37 stone at that age, at that time, and it was too much for me. You know, I'd done more Alaska one year, took the top out and towels off. When you took your coat off, all buckets of water was coming out of you, and I had to give in. But I never told them the truth at the BBC. I said, it's the travelling is getting me down, which everyone does. When you get a book, he's doing their money. That's it. I'm not going in no more, it's the travelling. And the actual director of the BBC said, no one ever leaves us. But I did keep the Sky job on. I kept the Sky because that was only at night, and I always had my driver aloft. He used to take me everywhere. But that was hard, you know, when I left the BBC. But as I said, Frankie, I would never have got the BBC job. I'd have never been on Sky Sports if it weren't for Frankie. So really, and people have come up to me now, you know, I was at Stratford yesterday, can I have a selfie with? I said, you're joking. 20-odd years ago, when even when I got on holiday, people say, how's Frankie? And it's just unbelievable, you know, it's just, and my youngest son, Charlie, had a baby last year. And you know what, I've got to tell you what he called it. He called it Frankie. He said, you'll never forget this one, will you, Dad? You know, so, you know, but that's what, Frankie's a major part of my life.
Yeah. At that stage when you got the BBC job and, you know, fantastic days working for them and you were doing Sky Greyhounds, we had some great times as well. You must have been really enjoying your career at that point. I bet you've got tremendous stories.
I was enjoying my life as well, and my home life as well was fantastic, and it was just lovely. You know, we was going to Newcastle one Tuesday, the following Tuesday was at Romford. I used to have people coming up to me at Romford giving us a great big bowl of jelly deals and say, I bought you them in Southend. And then when we went up north, you got other things. It was Shawfield when we done the Scottish Derby. Fantastic, Julie. You know,
but you're such a natural TV person as well. You must miss it.
I miss it. Of course I miss it. But when you say natural TV person, what you see with me now, you got me 24/7. You know, I'm not one of these to get home at night if I've done my money and sit there and cry. But you've just got to be yourself, haven't you? You know, and then people love you for what you are. That is a difference, you know. People do love you for what you are. And
would you do TV again if you got the call?
Of course I would do it. Anyone in the country would want to do it, would they? But I don't think they'd want any... I'm only 24 stone now, so I'm 13 stone lighter now. But who's going to... You know, I'm an has-been now, and I'm too old for the game, and I really... Am I too old? I don't know for the game. All I do is speak the truth. I know more about odds. You can put odds on a board, and I'll tell you what the percentages are. That is my game, and that is what a betting person should do. When they price up a board... You should say the same, not having a go at you, but when you do Racing Post TV, when you see the odds come up, 2-1, 3-1, 3-1, 4-1, 4-1, you should say, oh, them bookies have got to give us a bigger price now. And when you ask for it, they will give you the bigger price, because when I was brought up, I'll never forget Dave Lawrence, who was the producer on Sky Grounds, he said to me, whatever you do, don't do anything bad to the bookies, be nice to them, because without the bookies, we're not in the betting ring, and that is the way to be. Be nice to everyone. And that in the long run, Julie, they might be nice to you. Might be.
It's definitely been a career of highs and lows, though. We've mentioned the Fanga de Tory one, but...
Well, it's going to be a film on that. They wanted to do a film. They wanted to put Ray Winston playing me. There was
you should
be.
Play yourself.
I don't know about that.
But anyway, there was another incident that actually sort of cost you more dearly, in a way, than Fanga de Tory. Certainly from an emotional point of view, it upset you more than what happened with Fanga de Tory. Tell us about...
What was this? What
the
was
incident
it?
Central Park and how you ended up coming out of the dog race.
One day, it was the 27th of December, I'll never forget. And I went in a local betting shop in Colton Hill in Nottingham, a Ladbrokes, done my money, I think I'd done about £1,700 in there that day. So the following day was a Saturday, I was doing the race, I was doing the Betfred TV in the morning, and I come back home, and a pal of mine rang me up, and he said, how you been going, Gal, over Christmas? I said, it's terrible, I've done my money Boxing Day, done my money yesterday. He said, I fancy some little, he said, there's some forecasts tonight, he said, leaders and finishers, which I've always done, which is in the book. If I have a forecast, I have a dog to lead and a dog to come second who's got to come from the back. Because if you have a forecast, two early pace dogs, whoever don't lead at the first bend is not going to win the race. So that's the way I've always played, leaders and finishers. And that day I had some forecast doubles, and luckily enough I had three up out of six. So I had three different meetings, Newcastle, Monmore and Central Park, and I got three up out of six to forecast. It come to I think I had £2 full class doubles and it came to about £8,000. So I put them on two different slips because although I went in the Ladbrokes at it, you get a bonus if you actually win on, if they all win, which they never all won. Anyway, on the following day, I went to a point-to-point on the Sunday at Cottenham in Cambridge. I asked Nicky, my son, to go and draw one of the tickets because I was going away on the following day. We was going to Tenerife for a week, me and Lofty. And he drew the money and he said, the lady said, do you want to draw the other bet as well? And I said, no, leave the other one. Wait till I come back with one of the, I'll do now, it'll be January, I'll be skint, it'll be nice to, you know, you've got £4,000 to come back. And sweet as a nut, got the £4,000 they paid me, left the other one. On the Monday morning, I got a phone call saying that you better come back, there's been a big coup for me, like what I've done. I said, what have I done? Well, you're involved in this, what did they call it, a betting, everyone won millions or whatever. Anyway, I come back. On the Sunday night, I was at the snooker for the Masters at Alexander Palace. Got a phone call from the Racing Post Chief Graham, right, and said, what I've got to do, what happened, told them the actual truth, what it was, what I told, what I'm telling you now, had some £2 full class double leaders and finishes, whatever. On the following day, when I read the paper on the Monday, it said that I was the leader of a gang of punters who put the bet on in Nottingham, which was complete lies, absolute complete lies, and it said at the bottom, I should imagine he could lose, his job with Sky will be in jeopardy. Which was absolute ridiculous. I haven't done nothing wrong. Anyway, I rang up George Irving, I think, at the time of it. So, don't worry, Gal, as soon as you get there, I can't put you on the telly this week until it's all clear. Yeah, no problem, George. I know it's going to be all clear. Ladbrokes, it was £8,500, I think, now, they paid me. They paid up after about 5 or 6 days, no problem with the bets or nothing. Everyone else trying to get involved, saying I was the leader and all like that, which was absolute rubbish, Julie, you know. The thing is, if you're going to do anything wrong, you wouldn't go and put the bet on yourself, which I did, because I had no worries. I never moaned the day before when I'd done 1,700 quid in there, that was nothing. And then after that, and then the Sky job dried up, and I just couldn't go out anymore. We've got a greenhouse where we live in a, I live near Melton Mowbray in a little village, and honestly, I was getting up every day. I never wanted to be a bookie, never wanted to go horse racing. Just sat there for nearly a year, and that's why I just completely give up everything. No bookmaking for that year, and I thought, they can't do this to me, because I've done nothing wrong. And in the end, it went to my head, and then I went to try to buy a car for Nottinghamcar.com, I'll never forget, and he said to the man, I'm not going to serve you with a car, but please go and see this fella, because I know you've got problems. And he gave me a little card. I went to see a, like an head psychiatrist or whatever, old chap, went round his house and I sat there with him on a leather three piece, I'll never forget, and he said to me, go back out there, you're a bookmaker, you've done nothing wrong, go back out there. And the following day I went to Worcester and everyone looked at me, they thought, what you just said to me, when we first started this, where have you been for 5 years? And I just come back that day and it was the first day back and I thought, yeah, but if it wasn't for him, I suppose I would have still been in that greenhouse. My head just completely went, Julie. Well, people can get you, like where you said, Detroit, day, you've done all your money, done your life. I got over that. But when you've got a person who thought he was his friend, and to write absolute things about you that never happened, and you know, I still see that person there, and all he does is turn his head and duck you, because they don't want to know you.
You're quite a moral person, aren't you? You have strong morals when it comes to paying up bets, even when there's been mistakes over the years.
Julie, I've got more morals than ever. You know, maybe I shouldn't have so much more. But that was the day that hurt. And you see the people now still walking about round, and they're absolutely, you know, and you think to yourself, you know, look, you've just got to get it out of your head. But them sort of people are still around, unfortunately. And, you know, to put things, by the way, I've got a full page, exactly the apology in the Racing Post, what happened. So that tells you, doesn't it, what happened, you know. But I think I won £8,000 up with Ladbrokes, and I think it cost me £10,000 to get a lawyer, solicitor onto the case, because there's no way, I was born Gary Wilkes, there's no way they're going to say I'm a villain when I'm not a villain. And, you know, I wouldn't stand for it. And I won't stand for it now, you know, and but them days are over now. Are they over? I don't know. You're looking at 20 odd years, no, what about, I don't know, that's 5 years ago, six years ago.
What twists and turns more will there be in your life? But for now,
until they carry me out in a box, Julie, I do not know what's coming around the corner.
For now, you're back bookmaking, though. You're bookmaking for yourself.
Yeah, we're back now. We're about 3 years now bookmaking. Yeah, I've got pictures at Cheltenham, Ascot. And what gets me is that I'm a good enough bookie to bet at Cheltenham and Royal Ascot and other places. And I bet, you know, people like you. They come and bet with you. You know you ain't going to, you know, I don't want the world now, I just want a normal life, you know, just live a normal life and you know, appreciate every day we wake up.
Are you enjoying it now, though?
I am enjoying it. Yeah, been through. I've been through a lot of, you know, a lot of many of people I think would have run away. You know, many of people. But Saturday I was at Market Raising. Saturday, last Thursday and Friday I was at Hamilton in Scotland. And the people that we've done Hamilton on Thursday, and people saying, oh, I remember when you used to come and do the betting of Billy King, who owned Shawfield. You know, he's the governor of Shawfield, William King, and his son was there. He's a bookie young. But hello, Gary. Lovely to see you. And it is nice, you know, where people still respect you for what you are, and for not what, you know. It's lovely, Julie, honestly, to see the, and Scotland, you know, I love the punters in Scotland. Well, it's like when we go to Ireland as well, we do the dancing. I love it.
There's two men in your career who I know you want to pay credit to that have been a big influence on you.
Yeah, Barry Earn has been a real, who's, well, we all know King Bazza. He's been loyal to me, and I'll do the betting on the dart. As soon as they've not got a big sponsor like William Hill or Ladbrokes or Coles, if it's not them, I'll stand in. We've done the Premier League this year. Barry Earn's been really good. And the man that saved my life, Fred Doan, founder of Betfair, the governor of Betfair.
When
I
was
Betfair. I should have said Betfair. No, I'll take that all away with Betfred. And what he done, Fred, he was, well, I was 37 stone. I was in hospital, Solihull Hospital, dying with, I had everything wrong with me, diabetes, everything, getting bigger by the day. And he asked Nicky, my boy, Fred, he said, oh, how's your dad? And he said, no. And all of a sudden, I'll never forget, I was in the hospital and the nurse came in with a sister and she said, you're being moved to Parkway Private Hospital at 6 o'clock. And I said, well, what am I doing there? And she said, you're having an operation tomorrow, you're having a gastric band, I had the sleeve, the bigger one, not the band. And I said, well, I can't, it was 10 grand and Fred paid for it all for me. And he saved my life, and people moan about it. But if it weren't for Fred Doan, unfortunately Fred lost his wife Mo last year. And we bought a little ground, called it Mo 21, you know, after Mo and that. But them two people out the game, you know, it's surprising, Julie, how many people lose your number. You lose your phone number, you know what I mean? So very, very surprising. When you're up high, they all want you. When you're down, no one wants it. No one wants you at all. And that's how, unfortunately, that's how this life is, isn't it?
We've got more stories to come, but they are endless. We could stay here all day. If people want to know more, you've got a new book out.
Yeah, I've got a new book out called Angels, Tears and Sinners. I don't know if you can see it, Gary Wilson, and it's even Harry Redknapp's put at the bottom. If there was a king of the betting jungle, Gal would be odds on favourite from the king of the jungle, Harry Redknapp. So, you know, it's lovely to see that people still want you. It's just as what you said, they still want you. You know, it's like the TV world. It's getting you on ITV on that Friday. Who'd have thought they'd have wanted it? Who did they want? What bookie they want to find? There was a millions of bookies left there and they dug me out. So maybe you never know what's around that corner, Julie.
If your professional life has had its ups and downs, we can certainly say the same for your private life as well, which not too many people will know about. Let's go back to your first wife, Phyllis, who you had a daughter with.
Yeah, I had a daughter and sons. Yeah, Phyllis was living in, well, I met Phyllis, used to work in Scotland, live in Scotland, and we was at a stag do in Benidorm, and a big coach pulled up, 68 girls got off it, all from Scotland, so from the factory, like where they worked, you know. And finished up knowing her and coming back. And I ran away to Jersey for a year and everyone thought I was dead, like I'd been from here. And I come back from Jersey and they said, oh, Phyllis has been on the phone, worried about you. I rung up, I said, oh, I've done a season in Jersey. You never even told me mum and dad, I just disappeared, just went.
What?
Mad, Julie, mad. You know, when you're a kid, you don't know, dear. And then Phyllis come down, we got married, lived in Tottenham. And then we went to South Ockenden, we got a council flat. South Ockenden was the worst place, the only place you could get a council place with. When you went, everyone else never had you, but South Ockenden would have you. I loved it there. And near Romford, South Ockenden, Avely. And after that, yeah, and it was just, you know, merry-go-round, isn't it, you know, life.
What happened with Phyllis?
I think the bookmaking got, why we split up was because of bookmaking. I was going out every day. And I wanted all the cars and everything and all the big, I thought I was a little bit bigger than what I was, I suppose. You know, flashiness and all that. And then I met someone else I was at the races and I met Sue, who was my wife. You know, I never actually, you know, my second wife, I've only been married twice. And I met Sue and we had children there. And she lived in Birmingham at the time. And met her and everything. And then the game was really good for me. I was getting big money. I bought an house in Toaster, called it the Winning Post as well. and everything was flying. And then Dettori Day, she was 7 months pregnant with Charlie, my youngest son now, and you can imagine everything went up in the air. But we stayed together.
She stood by you through Dettori,
she did stand by me, yeah, give her a due. She had an house in Birmingham, Pearman's Close, never forget it, 21 Pearman's Close, and we had to convert the garage into a bedroom, and I stayed there and never had nothing, and built up again from there, and that, and it, we had a good life there.
You've said that you've always had a problem with love, and you said the reason for that is because it's hard to love when you've had a bad day at the races.
I think that's right, Julie, yeah, as well, it is hard.
It affects you that much, well, in your private life.
I don't think it's... What happens if you've gone out with your bit of money in your pocket and you've had a bad day? Everyone who says to you, oh, it don't make no difference whether I win or lose. It all depends what you're playing with. If you've got £1 million in your pocket and if you do £2,000, it don't make no difference. But if you've only got £2,000 in your pocket and you do your £2,000, you're thinking, well, what am I going to do tomorrow? And when you get in and all of a sudden, you know, you're watching that telly and someone says, I've got a text and it's Love Island, and you think to yourself, hang on a minute, I've done two. Where am I going to go to work tomorrow? How am I going to get up? You know, and demonstrate, and that's been, I've been like that all my life, honestly. You know, it's been like living from day to day and different things. Even when you're at it right off, like, you know, with money, you're still thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? You know, it's just so strange my life has been, Julie, honestly. It's been up and down so much.
You've also obviously got this reputation as the belly from the telly. And yeah. At that time that you were with Sue, you got up to 37 stone.
37 stone, yeah.
Which must have caused real health problems for you. I know you've told me about times on Sky Dogs where, yeah, you know, you couldn't even... Well, you could barely stand. You couldn't get
barely
yourself
stand,
to the toilet.
Barely stand. I was at Sunderland one night. I never forget. I was dying to do a wee, and I just stood there with a microphone, got weeing myself on the floor. No one looks, you know, that's how bad I was with it. And then when I had the operation, when I had it done, and then all of a sudden I'd come home and you think to yourself, oh, walk through this, you know, it was, you know, I had to walk, I couldn't even get on the trolley, they never had a trolley big enough for me to take me to the operating theatre, so I had to walk to the operating theatre, like, you know, to have it done. And I'll never forget the anaesthetist, as I was lying there, I looked at his arm and he had a Tottenham Hotspur sign on his arm, and being an Arsenal supporter, and I went, oh, no, and I thought I was having a nightmare. And he said, he was speaking to me, he said, are you Arsenal? I said, yeah. He said, oh, I'll put the needle in a bit deeper for you. And then I was gone, and then I had the operation done, and the actual surgeon said, in 5 months you'll lose 14 stone. You'll be down to 23.5 stone. And he was right. It's how long it took, like, you know, but...
Why were you so big? Was it a food-related issue?
I do not know. On my life, I don't know why I got so big.
Did you eat a lot?
Well, I must have ate a lot to get to that size, you know, and... But now, since I've had that gastric sleeve done, I can't eat meat, and I can only eat fish and little bits of portion of that. But you can't get any little, you can't get any lower, you can't get any bigger. But I am living proper, you know. Well, I say living proper, I've always lived a good life, you know. Even when you've got nothing in your pocket, I've always had a good life, you know. But I'm now living in a little village now. We've got 30 houses in the village.
Well, we should go back a bit on that one, because when you had this operation, your personal life then took another turn.
Yeah, biggest turn of my life this was, and I'd just come out of hospital and I went home, and when I was having the operation, Sue went through my phone and there was texts there from someone who said, oh, please God, I hope you get out of this, girl, and everything, and we'll have a bit of lunch together when you've done it and everything. The girl that used to ride my horses in the old, when I had winners like Sharon, you know, and then Sue took upon it that I was having an affair with her. Well, 37 stone, you don't have too many affairs. I'll be true, but the only affair I wanted to have was with McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken. And anyway, she left me. I think I had the operation about 4 days. I come home and she said it's all over and everything, the marriage and different thing. And I was gone. Like, you know, you say I'm happy-go-lucky, but I lived in my car for about 2 weeks in a Mercedes. But and then Sue's boy said I could stay there with him, but I never wanted that. I had out a flat, paid all the money, couldn't go in there at night. I was used to sleep in the car outside, and in the morning at 6 o'clock I used to go in there, have a shower, get ready, and then just go out again and go in betting shops and anything. I was absolutely done, my head was done. And about 3 weeks later, Sharon rang me and I told her what had happened. She said, come here with us, come up here, where we live now. And she only had a 2-bedroom, like, up and down, and with her daughter and that, and it was hard at first, you could imagine. And then she split up with her husband, and it looked like that it was like Sue was right, but I go on Jeremy Cole any program to prove that there was nothing in it in them days. And I finished up now with Sharon, and I've been with her now 5 years. So my life is so different to what I used to live, where we used to go to Birmingham, all the lovely restaurants and everything, you know, and a lot of holidays. But now, I'm enjoying life again, you know. It is. I don't go in betting shops no more. I've given that up as well, going in betting shops. So really, my life's getting better. And as I said, I've got a pitch on every racetrack in the country, really.
I think everybody watching this will want a fairy tale ending to the story. Are you happy now?
Can't give you a fairy tale ending.
Are you happy?
I'm as happy now as I've been for a long, long time.
That's good.
I'm happy now as I've been for a long, long time. But fairy tale endings, we don't know. Is there it's usually a good ending, isn't it, a fairy tale ending? But all I want to do really is I want my children to grow up, my grandchildren. It'd be lovely to see, you know, my grandchildren more than what I do and everything, and give time. I think in this life, Judy, it's not all about money. You know, it's like bookmakers now. You go to the racetrack, you get bookies who want to lay a bet, like Betfred, he'll lay a bet. Ben Keefe, he'll want to lay a bet. Myself, I play, but not too big now. Rather than stand one for thousands, what I used to, or million. You know, if I ever lose an hour for £400 or £500, I think, well, that's enough to stand them for, like, you know. But look, life is only what you make it, isn't it,
babe? What do you think of the bookmaking industry now? It's obviously changed a lot.
I think the betting shops, you know, I wouldn't want a betting shop if you give me £1 million, because it's hard. It's not that. It's all about my dream to be, now you just said that, if you had it, I'd love to have a bit of land, retired greyhounds, but treat them like what they should be treated like. Have horses, retired race horses as well. Have like a block of kennels for 40 greyhounds, and all the beds are lovely with, you know, like Kevin Hutton does, treats them like, but they're bedrooms, aren't they, with the dogs. And then have horses as well, or retired race horses there. Get somewhere with about 6 or 7, 10 acres of land and look after, because without dogs and horses, I wouldn't be here. You know, I wouldn't be here. And I think we've got to show a lot of respect to the game that we're in. You know, bookmakers, you ask some bookmakers, if you say about an injured greyhound or an injured horse, they don't care. I've seen people at the race course cheering on horses to fall. You know what I mean? Cheering on horses to fall. I've owned horses, you know, I've brought up with horses now, even, you know, where we are. And, you know, when they cheer horses, and it just turns me over, Julie, to know what the rubbish there is out there. And a lot of these people, for money, you know, when an horse falls, you see people put their hands up in the air, oh, that's good. And little do they realise that horse could have broke its leg, or the dog could have broke its leg. And we've got to stop that, you know. I don't know how we're going to do it.
You're really welfare conscious, aren't you?
I started off in the kennels, didn't I? You know, if that was my first job in the kennels and everything, and I just would love to put something back, you know, into it. You know, I can't afford to buy all the acres and everything to do, but you never know. You know, something, I might have a go on the lottery, Julie. I think that's my only chance of getting the money.
Looking back on your life as a whole, with all the ups and downs we've talked about, are you glad that you've been around bookmaking, either as a player or a layer?
I suppose, I know this is going to sound terrible, but I think when I used to sell flowers down the market, I was more happier. You know, when you was first brought up, you know, I would never have known bookmaking. I would have never known what £1,000 looked like, or £2,000 or £5,000. I was more happy going to get me a bit of money working, and, you know, like doing me flowers down the market, you know, Lever Lane, and maybe my children, you know, my sons, they all like a bet, unfortunately. You know, and I don't think it's done them any good wanting to, you know, because all they say to me is, well, what chance have we got with what you've done? We're just, yeah, and, you know, it's all down to me again, isn't it, really? But what can we do, Julie? I've loved my life anyway, so. And I'm back on the TV. It might only be your TV,
Julie.
I'm back on the Julie Collier TV.
And still with a big smile on your face. I know everybody will have enjoyed hearing your story. And as I say, get the book if you want to read more. But
I
hope we'll see you on some primetime TV again sometime.
Well, that's down to you, that's down to you, babe.
But thank you very much.
Appreciate you. Thank you. And everyone, well, what can I say? Thank you very much. Thank you.